Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry K.B., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, July 2nd, 2019, and this is our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are at Chapter 3, page 37, in More About Alcoholism, starting with the second paragraph, beginning with, "You may think this is an extreme case." And we'll be reading through this one paragraph only, and it does end in how it could have happened. We'll be commenting on this one paragraph. Today's readers are Nan K. for the 12 Steps, Laura R. for the 12 Traditions, and the readers of their text are Eileen M., Jackie H., and Elaine T. Our newcomer greeter today is Wendy B., and Leslie M. will be our announcements coordinator. The share ID for yesterday, Monday, July 1st, 2019, our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13,099. That's 13099. And the share ID for this morning's Tuesday, July 2nd, 2019, 7 a.m., our Eastern Time meeting is 13,101. So that's 13101. OA Preemblem, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Nan K. to read our 12 steps of OA. Nan?
Hi, my name is Nan K. from Northern Michigan. Here are the 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
And thank you, Nan K., for your service this morning. And Laura R., you're going to be reading our 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous, 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Laura?
Yes, thank you. These are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, and my name is Laura R. from Colorado. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you. I pass.
Well, thank you, Laura R., for your service this morning. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our absence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no absence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. And that, please use your star 1 and not your mute button. That makes a big difference in the quality of the sharing on sound. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 37 in More About Alcoholism, which is chapter 3, and we're on the second paragraph on page 37, and it says, you may think this is an extreme case. And so would Eileen M. please begin reading? Start one.
Good morning, this is Eileen M., gratefully recovered in New Hampshire. You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characterized of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that, parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. Wow, I really identify with this paragraph. When I was in OA before I found the Vision Line, I used to hear very frequently in meetings to think through the bite. And I could never think through the bite. And I tried to do that over and over with the same results. And what this brings up for me is, being in the grocery store, like on a Friday night, and, just shopping for things and then coming upon an item, and I would kind of look at that item and I would be thinking, I know this is not a good idea, but, you know, maybe this time I will be able to have a little and then stop. And, I would often, like, you know, go back and forth, like think, okay, well, you know, maybe I won't buy this. And then, you know, I put it back and then I'd go back and get it at the end, you know. And it seemed like, you know, every time I made a resolution to stop and then I didn't follow through on that, I'd go back to the food. Then I would make an even stronger resolution to stop the next time, you know. And it was just, I just continued to go on and on like that. And I had no idea what action was actually needed, you know. This was while I was in OA, you know, for years. And I was just going around and around with this thinking. And, you know, I used to think that people overate because of things that happened in their lives, which, you know, living on that old thinking, that would further justify my thought of, oh, gee, if only this happened, or if only I would get a better job, or if only my life would somehow go better, I wouldn't overeat. You know, it just kind of perpetuated that thinking. And I'm just so grateful that I found, you know, the vision line, because it really saved my life, you know, having been in OA for decades and struggling. And I'm just really grateful for that, and I pass. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Eileen M., for getting us started this morning. Thank you. So I'm just going to remind everybody we're in Chapter 3, More About Alcoholism. We're on page 37, the first paragraph, and it begins with, you may think this is an extreme case. So who would like to share this morning?
Kara.
Debbie.
Okay, I heard Kara L.
Deborah.
Jackie H.
I heard John K. I heard Deborah.
Jackie H.
Last initial, please.
Deborah S.
S is in Sam, Deborah?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Thank you. I heard Jackie H. I'm sorry, I heard
Anna B.
I heard somebody before Anna.
Dana K.
Dana K. Okay. And then Anna, you said? Anna, what's your last initial, please?
Devola S.
Shlomit Hana. Sorry, it was Shlomit Hana B.
I think I heard a Hana.
That was me. That was me. Shlomit Hana B.
Okay. All right.
Devola S.
Yes. Shlomit Hana. We'll take you, and Devori, we'll get you on the second round, the first person, okay? Thanks, Devora. Shlomit Hana, S or B? Okay, I'll get that. All right, so let me tell you my lineup. Here are our lineup. Kara L., John K., Deborah S., Jackie H., Dana K., Shlomit Hana, I think it's a B. So let's get started. Kara L., you're up, followed by John K. Kara?
Good morning. My name is Kara L. from Long Beach, California, recovered compulsive overeater. And thank you for everybody that's doing service this morning on this meeting and bringing it to us. I love this. I don't know if I love this paragraph, but I identify so much with this paragraph. As I was hearing it read this morning and I was reading along with it in my big book, I was thinking on how much it speaks of my own willpower to me this morning. It just jumped out at me today. Our sound reasoning had failed us. The incentive idea had won out, you know. And I think that more and more, as I get the idea that my best plans are just my best plans, and the things that tend to work out are my higher power's plans, God's plans. And so what is my job? Well, my job is to clear my path to my higher power, to work the steps so that I'm continually asking my higher power for direction and to the best of my human ability following that direction. And it says in our readings that, you know, sometimes we're going to do silly things that, you know, that are, you know, my interpretation of what my higher power wants. It doesn't mean that I don't keep checking. And so I have to practice. I practice every day. I practice with everything. I just made my breakfast because I'm in California, so it's 7 a.m. And, you know, I asked, should I have this God or should I have this God? Should I have this God or should I have, you know, should I have this fruit this morning and that fruit this morning? You know, because I wake up with a head full of my own ideas and I have to remind myself that that's me. That's my self-will. And when I practice with the smaller things, then the bigger things get easier to rely on. And that habit is starting to form of continuously asking my higher power's opinion. Because I think my higher power has an opinion on everything. And my job is to listen and to ask. And I'm so grateful for that today. And I'm so grateful that the Big Book has these examples for us of, you know, the next day we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. And I, you know, I've done that. I relate so much to that because I would get up in the morning and go, I had the best intentions today. I know where there was my higher power. And when my higher power is in charge, I don't wake up the next morning with that. I wake up the next morning in gratitude. So with that, I'll pass and everyone have a lovely day. Thank you.
Thank you, Kara L. John K., you're up, followed by Deborah S. John?
Good morning. This is John Kiernan, recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. You know, I think there's two hugely important phrases in this paragraph. First is parallel with our sound reasoning. You know, I think this is such an important concept that the concept of insanity doesn't say, the book doesn't say we don't have any sound reasoning. You know, it says parallel. I know when I first came in and I heard them talking about insanity with the disease, I wanted to point out the many ways that was not true in my case. When I look around program, you know, OA in particular has lots of people that are very high functioning. And I think sometimes we compensated for our low self-esteem by overperforming and ending up in very high positions in work. And the fact is, though, that this insanity is so specific, and that's why it makes it so hard to battle, you know. If I had the kind of insanity that would make me, you know, come to in the middle of traffic in a bunny suit, I'd say, wow, man, I'm messed up. I better let somebody else tell me what to do here. But because we're so competent in so many ways, it's hard for us to accept that in this one area, maybe we do need to be told what to eat, you know. Now, not forever, but maybe until we're restored to some sanity. And then that second phrase is some insanely trivial excuse for taking that first drink. You know, I always said that we all find this example of Jim and the milk ridiculous, but you know who else found it ridiculous? Jim. But just not until the next day. I mean, think of it. How many times have we woken up in the morning after breaking our abstinence and say, what the hell did I do? What was I thinking? You know, when I lead relapse workshops, you know, I'll get people into small groups and have them brainstorm to come up with lists of those lies that the disease tells them. And, you know, the list runs from the absurd, like, oh, I've got to try this new product just to make sure I shouldn't eat it, to more rational ones like, oh, I can't offend the person who cooked this thing, especially for me. You know, my job is to try and be sane, but my disease's job is to twist the decision-making data as it comes in. Like I mentioned before, my favorite definition of insanity with regards to addiction is the state of mind which prevents normal perception. You know, and if I can't perceive things correctly, I can't make good decisions. You know, and since we're in program, we pretty much after a while know what we should or shouldn't be eating. Our disease has to warp that perception to make that decision of whatever I'm going to not, shouldn't be eating logical. It was logical for Jim to put that whiskey in that milk. For Jim. But for Jim in that moment. And to me, that's why the second step is made up of two parts. I like to flip it around sometimes to say, you know what? I'm insane and I need help. I need help from a power greater than myself. And to be honest, that power can be anyone who's saner than me in that moment of impulse, which is to say pretty much anybody. So I need to remember I need help. I have a higher power now. But I also believe God delegates help out to others, especially others in program. And that's why it's so important for me to stay in close contact with lots of my OA friends. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, John. And Deborah S., you're up, followed by Jackie H. Deborah?
Hi, this is Deborah, compulsive overeater, bulimic, abstinent today, recovering by working the big book steps. I'm grateful to read this passage again. I've read it a million times. I've been exposed to 12 steps since 1988, but only abstinent for about 6.5 years. To me, some of the things I've struggled with, because I'm abstinent doesn't mean my abstinence hasn't had to evolve. That's one thing I've learned is I get an abstinence. My very first abstinence was very loose, and that was fine because I was a binge vomit eater. And so the big important thing was don't binge, don't vomit. But then it changed, of course, as it needs to do. And whole food groups became part of the disease, and then certain items and behaviors. And I can really relate to this paragraph of you know, doing an insane thing while knowing it's insane and somehow thinking you're not insane. So for me, it's almost like I would feel like I was bipolar or schizophrenic or something. Like, I'm doing this insane thing. I'm going to buy the item, which I know will make me feel terrible later. But I know I'm not going to binge and throw up. So now I'm going to maintain that core. So it's okay if I eat this, but I know it's not okay if I eat this. And I know if I continue to eat things that don't feel safe, that I will eventually break my bottom line. And fortunately, I you know, I have this very, very diligent sponsor, and we've worked very, very diligently. And through the process of many, many 10th steps, it's been easier for me to really identify that those insane pieces and avoid them. And it's you know, it's interesting because I talk to people all the time who are not abstinent, and they're so hopeless, you know. And to me, it's, and I don't mean to be arrogant. I was hopeless for many, many years, but the core of why I was hopeless for those many, many years was that I did not want to give up my food, and I was angry at the thought of it. And for me now, this idea is, I understand my mind is crazy. I understand I'm going to have that insane thought that I can just put a little whiskey in my milk, or for me, that would be, sure, you can eat this food item. You never threw this food item up. It's been fine. And I can have all those thoughts, and I do have all those thoughts, much less so, of course. But then I sort of override them, and I feel like the daily meditation, the working the steps, the staying in touch with people, the currency, the immediacy of my program just has me roll right over those and just go ahead and be uncomfortable. And I think for me, that's been the key. I think we're going to think all kinds of things, but it doesn't mean we act on them. And for me, sitting on my hands and being uncomfortable has been amazing. Thanks so much.
And thank you, Deborah H.S. Jackie H., you're up, followed by Dana K. Jackie?
Good morning. Thank you for your service, Sherry. Thank you for everybody on the line. This is Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. So grateful to be here today. So grateful to have this book in my hands and for this program. And I'm grateful that I'm abstinent today and that I have hope and that I have joy and that I have a sense of well-being more days than I used to have. They're not just peppered through my life a little bit. They're almost daily. But the two things that stuck out to me, like many others have talked about, is the sound reasoning and the insane idea. I'm just really caught up here, as I was yesterday, on the two voices that are in my head. There's two of them all day long. One is that sound reasoning, which is my higher power. The other is the insane idea, which is my ego or my disease. And they're both there. And the thing about it, for me, who am an addict, I'm a human being too. The insane idea or the disease always talks louder and first. And that's why I do step 11 also, though, to keep my spiritual connection with my higher power so that, and then I have to be quiet. I do have to be quiet so that I can hear that voice. It's just not as loud and demanding as the other voice. And my sound reasoning, you know, it is my higher power. And my higher power oftentimes doesn't just talk to me in my quietness of my head. It talks to me through my fellows. It talks to me to maybe a thing, something I see on TV even. I look when I watch whatever I do watch. I don't watch much, but I watch for and I listen for God's voice. I listen for God's voice everywhere. And I am just, this is how I get to stay abstinent today, is by being here, doing these steps, listening to the voice that is quiet and reasonable, and that is God's voice. And to be able to recognize that the disease is the insane idea, and oh wow, it had me for many, many years, and I'm so grateful that today I have some peace of mind, and I'm in love with life, and I'm in love with I'm just in love with life today, and I'm grateful. With that, I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Jackie H. And Dana K., you're up, followed by Shlomi Hanna B. Dana K.?
Hi, yes, good morning. This is Dana K., recovered in Liberty, Missouri. And Sherry, if you'd time me, please. Thank you to all that are on the line today and making this meeting possible for us. So I want it so bad. I want that bite to feel better. I don't know that that's what it is, but I just know that I need whatever feelings have come up. I just need the emotions. I need the stress relief. I need the ease, and I need the comfort from that first bite. And those emotions just always led me back to that peanut butter cup or whatever it was. So yes, I had sound reasoning, or at least I thought I did, and I have this addict mind that brings me back to the food because I can't deal with life, and the only way I can is by getting that first lasting ease that doesn't really last very long, but that takes me out of myself and helps me to do life once again. Also, you know, no matter what my sound reasoning that argued against taking that first bite, it just never had enough power to overcome that craving, just that pure need. And so for me, sometimes, you know, there was an inevitable, insanely trivial excuse like whiskey and milk. And other times there just was no excuse. I just wanted it. I wanted to feel better. And other times, you know, I would just be like praying or, you know, crying out to God, please remove this. Please take this away from me. I can't. I just can't. I don't want to pick up that bite. I don't want to eat again. And it wasn't enough. Nothing worked for very long. And one of my little stories is that when my children were younger, before, you know, coming back into the 12 steps, you know, they had Halloween candy, and I'd tell them to hide it from me because I didn't want to eat it, but I really did want to eat it. And, you know, faced with their disappointment the next day that mom had eaten some of their candy, you know, my insane idea was, oh, if I just eat the peanut butter cups out of it, or, oh, if I just have, you know, three pieces of James's and three pieces of Madeline's, they won't know and it's going to be okay. And boy, you know, I was like a crazy woman, just, you know, I knew they were hiding it in the basement, and I would just be, you know, on a tear looking for that, because that overriding need for more of, you know, that substance overrode, you know, the same thinking that, you know, I really don't want to go back into the food. And thankfully today, for everyone on the line today, there is hope. Thank you so much. There is hope through this solution and working the 12 steps and through your higher power. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Dana Kay. And before we hear from Shlomi Hannah B., I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 37, the second paragraph. You may think this an extreme case, and we're sharing on that one paragraph. So we're going to hear from Shlomi Hannah B., and when she finishes, I'm going to take some more names. So get ready. Okay, Shlomi Hannah, you're up. Star 1 to unmute, please, Shlomi Hannah B.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Go ahead, please.
Okay, thanks. I was talking away. Thank you so much for your service. I really so appreciate this meeting. I appreciate everybody's shares. I'm actually out and about. Sorry for the background noise. I'm in Walmart. But I don't have a big book in front of me. But I've been hearing just what I need to hear about, you know, our insane thinking. The insane thinking, which, you know, we seem to think is normal. And that certainly is true of me. That certainly is true. You know, somehow I always seem to think that if I pick up and I have my food, that is going to make me feel better. And that's not true. It's not true. It doesn't make me feel better. I had a week of abstinence, and I won't say that it was easy. And then just life came crashing down on me on Sunday. Just everything hit the wall. And I picked up. And the insane thinking is that somehow this is going to stop life from crashing down on me. And it doesn't. It only makes it worse. It only makes it worse. And today I just feel so sick, you know, physically sick. You know, my stomach just feels really, and I haven't even been able to eat anything today because my stomach feels so sick. And just the tiredness. And I know that that's from the eating. And there's no sound judgment in that. There really is not. And it just never ceases to amaze me how I can make the same mistake over and over and over again. And the truth is, I know what sanity feels like because I've had in the past, not too long ago, 11 and a half years of good quality abstinence. And the insane part of my brain is saying, well, I'm just not so willing today. You know, maybe tomorrow. And how is that going to make me feel better? It's not going to make me feel better. And just hearing everybody share has really, you know, shares on this paragraph, what this paragraph says and what it means to them has really, really, really helped me start getting out of that and thinking about what is the sane thing to do. Because, you know, there's a lot of life to live and there's a lot of good things to look forward to. And this disease robs me from that. And I'm just praying that I can be willing to make the choice to live today and to make sane choices instead of insane choices. Thank you. I pass.
And thank you, Shlomi Hana B. So we're on page 37, the second paragraph. And I already have Devorah S. Who else would like to share?
Cheryl S.
Did I hear a Shirley S?
Yes, Cheryl S.
Cheryl S. Sorry about that. Okay, Cheryl S.
Kathleen O.
Lisa J. R.
Kathleen O.
Diane G.
Sabrina.
I think I heard Lisa J. R. And I heard a Diane.
Diane G.
G as in George. Okay, thanks, Diane.
Mag C.
And I heard Mag C. I think that's all I can take right now. So I have Devorah S., Cheryl S.,
Margo
O., Lisa J. R., Dana G., and Mag C. Devorah S., please go ahead. Devorah, star 1 to unmute, please.
Hi, good morning, and thank you, Sherry, and everyone on this line that makes this possible. My name is Devorah S., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey. You may think this is an extreme case. You know, honestly, if I, you know, before coming into OA and hearing about this program and reading this literature, I probably would have thought that this is an extreme case. And my thinking probably would have said, well, that's not me. I don't relate to that. How could a person do that? How can this person who has a whole life, who has a family and children and blah, 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 mess it up over a drink? And, you know, it took me a few years to get into pain and suffering from this disease, to realize how sick I really was, you know, till I got into this program, you know, weighing 280 pounds, being diabetic and high blood pressure and running from doctor to doctor telling me, and the doctor said to me, you need to lose weight. You're killing yourself. But my best thinking said, you know what, I'll try it tomorrow. And on the way home from the doctor, stopping off at a place and picking up food to eat on the way home, you know, and never, I don't think I thought like, oh, gee, you know, what's this going to, you know, the consequences. I just knew that, you know, woe is me, poor me, poor me. So this is my lot in life. So I'm going to die and that's it, you know. And that was the level of destruction where I was at. I was just, so what? There it goes, so what? And so, you know, fast forward, thank you, God, coming into this program, putting down the food and getting abstinent, and losing weight and getting into a thin body. But here I am today. I'm still here. Why is that? Because my thinking is still this. My thinking is still there. I'm human. I can't shut it off. But I need this program of recovery. I need these 12 steps on a daily basis and making conscious contact with God, because that is my the sound reasoning, like so many people have said on the line. That is my sound reasoning for today. I need, you know, to keep seeking what is it that God wants from me, because my best my best thinking is about me and my needs and my wants. And now I'm seeing here by working these steps, you know, honestly each day, that it doesn't work if I just follow a food plan. I need to be constantly relying and trusting that, you know, I had for many years an alarm going off on my telephone that would, you know, remind me every hour to make conscious contact, to turn my life and my will. And, you know, then it was at work and it was very difficult to have it. And now I'm off this summer and I put it back on. And what a difference it is making. Every hour the alarm goes off and I just stop and I pause and I say the third step prayer and I say, God, what is it that you want from me? How can I best serve you? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that just that little reminder each day, it's for me, it's profound. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much, Sherry.
And thank you, Devorah. Cheryl S., you're up, followed up by Kathleen O. Cheryl S., as in Sam? Cheryl? Was that Cheryl or Shirley? I thought you said Cheryl.
Star yes, hi. Cheryl S., can I be heard?
Yes, you can. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for the meeting. Thank you, Timekeeper, all the shares. It's been a while here for me. Oh, I love this page 37. You know, I was here at A Vision for You a few years ago, and I went on to another fellowship, and I had to deal with some core issues. And boy, oh boy, doing that has ignited my compulsion for food again. And, you know, that mental twist, that mental phenomena, born into dysfunction, my thinking is insane. And the disease is baffling, powerful, and cunning. And I tend to forget that. And so here I am. It's so funny. The other day, I was like, oh, my God, what is wrong? I felt so stiff and downtrodden. And, you know, it hit me. And I said, you know, this is how the sugar affects your body, because I had picked up the food. And for me, it's sugar, for sure. And how I had fooled myself, like the jaywalker, it, you know, not far-fetched at all for me, because I know today. And I know how it looks, how it works on me, and what happens when I pick up the food. You know, I'm very compulsive, and in most areas of my life, and sometimes that upsets me. And I think, oh, my God, not another one. You know, can I just give this one a break, Lord? You know, but unfortunately, you know, I'm not designed that way. I need my fellowships. I need to hear the shares, and I need to stay reminded. I can't rest on my laurels in any of them. You know, my food is so very important to me for my health. And as I get healthier in recovery, you know, it just becomes so much more aware. So I'm here and I'm back, and I'm grateful today I can share and be a part of the group. Know that, you know, I am just like the jaywalker, and I can injure myself if I don't stay close to my higher power and my fellowships. Thank you so much. I pass.
Thank you, Cheryl S., and welcome back. A warm welcome back. Kathleen O., you're up, followed by Lisa J.R. Kathleen?
Good morning, Sherry K.B., and thank you for your service this morning, and great to be on the line with all of you. Welcome to anyone who's new. You're in the right place. So you may think this is an extreme case. I do not think this is an extreme case, because as the real deal, as the real compulsive overeater, I have hundreds of examples of having that thought of putting whiskey in my milk, and this time it's going to be okay. That was always, you know, what came, my thoughts were, oh, it's going to be okay. I've got this. And I had been, once I came into 12-step recovery and realized I was powerless, this program worked for me, and I did what I was supposed to do. But when I started resting on my laurels, there came a time, probably 7 years of after 7 years of abstinence, and I was on a camping trip with friends. And, you know, what normal people do is 5 o'clock comes, it's time to bring out the beer, the wine, the martinis, the hors d'oeuvres. And I wanted to be normal. And I forgot I wasn't normal because we have a great, there's wonderful amnesia when it comes to addiction. And I thought, you know, it's going to be okay. I'm just going to have a few of these hors d'oeuvres and I'll be fine. You know, those words just should be ringing bells, red flags, sirens going. It'll always take me into a downward spiral. You know, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And as with Jim, it didn't start with, you know, oh, this time I'll be okay. I was resting on my laurels. I was not doing prayer and meditation in the morning. I was thinking, oh, you know, these meetings are kind of, it's the same old, same old. And I hear people say that even with vision meetings, you know, they stop listening because it's the same, whatever. And we have to pay attention. I know I do. I have to pay attention to my attitude. And, you know, I really, and Sherry, I know you'll call time because I'm not timing myself. Sorry. I have to keep the chute open every morning. I have to keep that connection. I have to start off with a connection with my higher power. Because if I don't do that, I'm going to go into my ego, and my ego is always going to take me into wanting to control people, wanting to control my food, wanting things my way, and it all being about me, which ends up being a really miserable, unhappy, unhealthy, emotionally, spiritually, physically day. So when I start off with a prayer and meditation, when I do what it tells us to do in steps 10, 11, 12, when I pay attention when things are bothering me and do a 10th step on it, take that pause, just stay connected. It's a whole different world out there. And so I need to remember when I want to control something, there is no power. And the only way I'm going to get the power is to stay connected with my higher power. And thank you very much, Sherry. I pass.
And thank you, Kathleen O. Lisa J.R., you're up, followed by Diane G. Lisa?
Thank you so much for your service. Lisa J.R. here from Baltimore, keeping it green. So grateful we studied this book over and over again. You know, I'm like the child of the jaywalker, Jim and Fred. And in all three of those stories, we saw, you know, incidences of the crux of the problem, the mental blank spot. So it's great to work with others, to keep working with sponsees, keep reading this literature over and over again so that we keep it fresh, we keep it green. You know, I'm the first guy that will identify out. So even in recovery, you know, I can go down that road, have those thoughts. Well, you know, I'm one little bit isn't going to hurt me. One bite, one, you know, sip, you know. And I've found when I got into recovery, I changed staterooms on the Titanic. I started shopping. You know, I got the same sense of ease and comfort from seeing a brown box from Amazon on my front porch. I was doing it daily. It was ridiculous. So, you know, dig in every day, work with newcomers every day. It's the only way I can make it. I know that I will start getting that twisted thinking again. And, you know, by the time I reached the nadir of this illness, I was like I crossed that invisible line somewhere. I don't even know where. When I became like what Brody described in Jaws, the perfect eating machine, I was a sociopath. I didn't care about people. I didn't care about things. I even lied to myself and I thought, well, at least I'm going to work every day. This hasn't taken my job from me. Well, you know, it's only because I dodged that bullet by God's grace. I was miserable to work with. So, you know, now, you know, it's telling because one of my coworkers said to me after I had a little program under my belt, he goes, are you taking medication? You just seem so mellow now. You're not so uptight. And I thought, boy, that's the first indication to me that program was working. but it's something I've got to do every day. It's like breathing. Got to stay in those 10th steps, 11 steps, working with others and coming to meetings and interacting with people in program. That's so important. You know, we only get attacked from this disease when we drop away from the pack, just like the predators, always waiting for the one that falls back and isn't paying attention. And I'm here to say that for another day, by God's grace, I can stay in the pack with that. I'll pass.
To JR. So we have about 4 minutes left. If Diane G and Mag C will take 2 minutes each, we can end on time. So Diane, please go ahead. Diane G. Star 110 mute, please. Diane G, are you there? Okay, we're going to move on to Mag C. Mag C, star 110 mute, please.
Hi, guys. This is Mags in Denver, and I'm so happy to be here. And, you know, extreme, you've got to be kidding me. Isn't that extreme? All my life, it's like an extreme case? Hell no. I could eat over the littlest thing because, you know what, my life depended on it. At that moment in time, I was so desperate for something. So desperate for, I don't know, not feeling like I'm going to go insane or crazy or slit my wrists. I was so sad or angry. Well, I didn't want to feel those things, and so I stuffed them. And so, heck no, whiskey and milk, that's not extreme. That makes total sense to me because that's how I survived. And, you know, today it's July 2nd. It's hotter than hell. Some days are just those kind of days and where I know I have to put on my big girl pants, come to a meeting, and meditate because something is going on in my soul. And today, I woke up and I was just angry and I was cranky and I'd forgotten, you know, my medicines last night. And so I had to get up in the morning and like 2 a.m. and do my asthma meds. And I was so pissed when I couldn't go back to sleep. And I'm just like, I just can't do it today. You know, I'm so angry at the day already. So I meditate and I grant myself some time. And you know, I just can't even tell you how sad I feel. I don't get to go back to work. My body's not getting better. I have, you know, just early onset osteoarthritis, and I have a spinal defect or deformity, which I, all my life, I wish I could have just forgotten. And those decades and decades of anorexia and bulimia and gymnastics and marathoning and all of that crazy bulimic exercise, they take a toll, and we now know that that perpetuates itself into our later years. And so here I am. That's how I survived. And so I honor my body today. That's what I'm going to do for myself. I am going to be gentle with myself. I worked my butt off for years to stay alive. And I don't have to do that today. I've got women that are so incredible that will cradle me and they're loving this program, and I have these steps that are going to help me get through this. And I love all you guys, and I'm so glad you're here, and this day is already looking better, and that's all I got. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mag C. And, you know, we got one more minute left if Diane G can get on the line. If not, we'll just go ahead and end earlier, a little early today.
Hi, this is Diane G.
Okay, Diane, you have 1 minute, please. Thank you.
Yes, quickly. I love this this part parallel with our sound reasoning, and then there's the insane idea, and that's something I struggle with because I'm very smart and I'm a very quick learner, except in this area of my life, which requires not my intellect, but, you know, my heart, my intuition, that reaching out to higher power, that's difficult for me, but trying day by day to come to an acceptance that this is the insanity I have and that this is the work that I have to do is so to save my life. You know, there's nothing more important than that. And so on a daily basis, I have to let go of that intellect and know that there's something else out there, my higher power, who is waiting to help me. So I appreciate you, everyone being here. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Diane G. Well, that's all the time we have today for sharing. Thank you so much for all your wonderful shares today, all the shares that, and all the people that listened. And I'd like to thank Team Tuesday for their service. The 12 Steps by Nan K., The 12 Traditions by Laura R., The Read of Our Text was Eileen M., page 164 will be by Jackie H., our backup waiting in the wings was Elaine T., our newcomer greeter is Wendy B., and our announcements coordinator is Leslie M. Let's give all ourselves a big hand and thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody, for that. So now we're going to have Jackie H. read page 164, and we will close with that, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, Jackie, please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only and keep you until then. Jackie?
Thank you, thank you. This is Jackie, recovered in Colorado. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.